I'm coming.
Ah, hello.
Come in, come in.
I am Yesteris, keeper of the sacred library. You must be here about the tiny bookcase. Then follow me. I've sent two adventurers out to find stories. So join me here by my crystal ball, and let us see where they are now.
Some nuts.
What? No, I'm okay.
Oh, heads up.
That is Yesteris.
Who?
I'll ask the questions here. What is this dive called?
The Hanging Goblin.
I see. And who may I say I'm being addressed by?
I'm Brad Rawlinson. I make YouTube videos.
You make what?
It's complicated.
Extremely.
Fine. Keep your secrets to yourselves. I just want your stories.
Of course. Nico, be a chap and start us off. This time it's The Fisherman.
It is? Okay. Okay, yeah, I've got something for that.
Every seven sunrises is the best day. I wait for most of that time. I lay on the stones by the sea. They are cold on my belly and I like that. When the sun has been against them, I don't like how they feel so much. They sting my feet and I have to go underneath them. This is where the crawling things live. Little snipping things that try to pinch me. They are very crunchy, and I do not like to eat them very much. Sometimes I have to eat them, because there isn't anything else. I used to eat sausages. I loved them very much. My first person would sneak them to me. He would make a joke each time, and it was always the same one. I know it was a joke, because he said so. Just a joke! Ha ha! He bared his teeth, which meant he was happy. I liked that. He would say, "Whoops, drop that one, must be this rubber fork." And he would drop the sausage where I could get it. Just a joke, ha ha. We would both eat sausages then, which was very nice. We would both do many things. We would sleep inside, where the wind didn't bite you when you were trying to sleep. We would go on walks together, which were very much nicer than walking alone, and often ended in sausages. One day we stopped going for walks and eating sausages, and my person lay down a lot. He was shaking a lot of the time, but he did not make a fire in the grey place like normal. I lay with him, but he just became colder, and soon he did not scratch my ears anymore. I do not know why he didn't love me then. No matter how many times I called to him, he never turned to face me. Eventually other people came, and they made me go outside. When they were gone, so was my person. I waited for him to come back for 8 whole sunrises, but I was so hungry that I had to go away. I went to our sausage place, where the people drank the foamy brown water. They would be silly and fall over. Many of them would rub my belly. I was a good boy. They told me so. But no one had one of my person's rubber forks. When I tried to catch the crumbs that fell, they hit my nose. They called me bad. The big man who lived behind the wooden wall and had the cloth would chase me. He whipped me with his cloth and I cried. That was when I had to live outside. I needed to find my person. He used to go away for a few sunrises at a time, When he came back, his face was salty when I licked it. He would be cold. But he always bared his teeth and squeezed me. He would bring little tasty things, and we would always have sausages then. They were the best times. Perhaps if I waited there, by the big water, he would come back on the small house with all the other people. Then he would scratch my head and I would lick his face. So now I lay on the path that stretches over the water on every seventh sunrise. The small house floats in and the men get off. Some of them used to greet me and pat me. Some even fed me. One or two still do, but I hear the voices of the younger ones. They did not know me when my person used to come back on the floating house. They say I am small and weak, that I smell. Perhaps I do, but I am not concerned with this. I am sad when they kick me, but I try not to feel it. When my person comes back on the boat, I have to be a good boy. No limping, just a good boy. And then we can have a walk, and we can have sausages. I have not had them for a very long time. I have stopped counting how many times the house has come and gone. I stopped at the highest number I could think. Sometimes it comes back for a long time. Once some men came, and they used strange things to lift it out of the water, and I could see the floating house's belly. They used knives to pluck little white shocks from its underside. I found meat in them, but it was not nice. Other times it would come back and its nets would be light, and they would go away again almost as soon as they had returned. Every time it comes, I check, and I will never miss one, even when all I have eaten is crunchy crawlers from under the rocks. I go, because my person may come back. But always it is the same old men, and the new ones who hurt me, and the nets full of fish. I like fish. Not so much as sausages, but it is nice in my belly, and it means I can go to sleep and not worry about waking up in time. I worry a lot about waking up for my person. Some days it is hard to wake up. I heard one of the men say I had waited for 6 years, and that was such a shame. He patted my head, and he had sadness in his eyes. I do not know what a year's is, and I do not know why he would lie. Tomorrow is the seventh sunrise. I have not found anything to eat since the floating house came last time. I am very tired. I will try and sleep, and hopefully my person will come home with the sun. We can go for a walk and have sausages. Until then, I am very sleepy. I shall close my eyes. Just for a moment.
Well, thanks for hitting me in the chest with a hammer, Nick. That was,
You said, we said fisherman, I thought sad dog, immediate sad dog.
Oh. Absolutely wretched little canine. Yeah. Little bastard. Oh. Well, that's a distinct turn from the usual comedy and eroticism, Nick.
Well, I was actually really worried about this one, because it's not a style I ever write in. And especially, you know, trying to have a dog's internal monologue. Having really simple sentences without the flourishes that I would normally use to give character. So it was just, how raw an emotion can I lay out?
Mm.
And I think it went okay.
I think it worked. I think you really do feel just the horrendous depth of sadness that's left behind by such a big love.
His love of sausages, right?
Yeah, sausages, yeah, of course.
I, reading it then, I realised quite how many times I had written down the word sausages. I was like, is this too much? Is this too many?
We're going to need some sort of sausage counter for that story.
Just add a ping. just the word bangers every time.
Have you ever actually had a dog? Cause I know you've got a you know, I know you really like small dogs. I know you like Gaspode and Pratchett and all that.
I do.
Kind of thing.
I have had a couple of dogs. Had a boxer called Archie, who was amazing, and never realised he got big. and we had a little staff.
I wasn't quite expecting the first story I was present for to be so somber. I guess.
Were you looking for goblins and wizards, Brad?
Kind of, yeah. Or just like, you know, the I know you two. I know what comes out of your brains. But no, it was I was getting strong flashbacks to the Futurama episode.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen it.
Oh yeah, because Fry, it's Fry's dog, isn't it? And he,
it is, yeah. And he thinks his dog's moved on, but it spends years waiting for him.
If
and
it's
one of the
forever. That one.
No, don't. Not after this. Don't play with my emotions. No, it was fantastic. I really enjoyed the way that you because I think you did this with a previous story as well. The way you explain things from the perspective of somebody who doesn't understand them. Like, like obviously, because we know the house they all come from is the boat, and the restaurant and I assume the chef trying to beat the dog away, but you personify those things through the perspective of the dog very well. I enjoyed that.
Well, thank you.
I got pub and landlord instead of restaurant and chef.
It was a pub. Was Brad it? Is just classier than we are.
He is just classier than me. Yeah, I've just got pubs on the brain.
I just miss them, okay?
I cannot remember the last time I went to a pub.
It's been a while. I think the last time I went to a pub
a very long time.
Was in Cambridge, and that was in February. So that was...
Oh, bloody hell. Shout out to the Haymakers. Excellent local pub.
Yeah. I think we need to change the mood now. I think it's your turn to tell a story, Ben, because otherwise this is the saddest podcast so far.
I think it's going to be a deeply strange change of mood. Not entirely sure how this one's going to come out, but I'm looking
completely
forward to it.
Thrilled for that. I cannot tell you that enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, all right. Nick, can you give me a American voice that I can try and copy?
All right, you want like a California thing?
No, a bit more like Middle America.
Got Trump. Like,
it's a great wall. It's the crooked Hillary. She's a shit. You know, I was in the store the other day and I saw the crooked Hillary. She was putting her emails. She was crabbing them all into a bookshelf. Absolutely unreal. She was there. She was buying my book. Trying to learn how to be.
You should have done your study. Your story in that voice.
Wow, it's been a lot of time since I've had sausages. Hey, we used to go for the best sausages. I got the best sausage guy in all of New York. We go for sausages, the greatest sausages, American sausages, none of these China sausages.
Fuck yeah.
That has to stay in now.
Yep. The fisherman. Billy Brook knew how to fish. Everyone knew that. His pop had imparted the knowledge with the reverence he usually reserved for religion or football. Billy smiled to think of all those trips they'd taken together, all the fish they'd caught, the manly secret of knowing how to catch what they ate, shared between a father and son. The smile slipped a fraction as he remembered the yawning at 3 a.m. on those long journeys. The smell of the bait shop making him gag as his pop waxed lyrical on lures to an enthusiastic small business owner looking to land a fat sale. The oversized waders that he would grow into. Billy flicked out his tapered line, studying the water like it was a dog-eared copy of Hustler. After a few moments, he reeled it in and sloshed back to the bank. As he did so, his heavy boots kicked up gouts of subsurface mud that were quickly stripped away downstream by the flow. Nothing had latched for him so far, but as his pop used to say, "Give me another beer and shut up." Beer number 6 of the day for Billy was, according to the label, a delightfully dense APA with a pineapple-laden nose feel. Billy liked that it was cold. All of his equipment was of the best quality, from the carbon fibre fish cooler, currently home to an expansive collection of artisan ales, to his military-grade waders that fit perfectly. Everything smelt of money spent, and of course, fish. The true heart of his lifestyle was, however, the Zipper XT-7500. The sleek rod was his constant companion. Billy felt content whenever he held it out, the graceful curve of the lengthy pole standing away from him proudly. Though it was a slender piece of equipment, the given sway of the metal allowed him to fill up his cooler every time. He had been a good fisherman before unleashing the potential of the Zipper, always bringing home enough for the family, but with it, he was feeding the hungry people on his street regularly. He knew they began to salivate whenever his truck pulled back into the driveway after a weekend on the water. He would never allow anyone to hear it from him, but being able to feed people like that made Billy feel like Jesus. As he gulped down the beer, Billy considered the river in front of him. He had to admit, even with his lifetime of experience, he couldn't explain why nothing had bitten yet. Then he heard it, the gentle whine of a casting line. He turned, not daring to believe that anyone would upstream him like that.
Howdy!
The call rang out over the babble of the river. Not 50 feet away, a man was stood, his own pole bending under the weight of whatever gargantuan water denizen he was wrangling.
Mighty fine day for it. Sure is. What brings you here? I reckon same as you. I've got a full load already. Lucky I brought another cooler. How you getting on down there? Swell, yeah. They sure are swimming. That the old Zipper you got there? The 7500, actually. That's what I thought. You might have more luck if you were to upgrade to this here 7600 Magnum.
Billy looked at the man's rod. It was majestic. 10 foot, at least, of pure whip. The eyelets for the line gleamed in the sun, whilst the line itself was pulled taut. The whole pole looked somehow both rigid and flexible. As he watched, the man used his left hand to scoop a net under his catch and drag it from the water. It was a beast. The man whistled.
Hot damn! This is one chunky motherfucker now, ain't it?
Sure is. The man made his way onto the bank and held the fish up to the afternoon sunlight. Billy could see he was very pleased with himself.
Hey fella, what's your name?
Billy thought for a moment that the man might be addressing his catch before he himself caught on.
Billy.
Well, Billy, mind watching my gear? I need to head back to my campsite and fetch the other cooler. Sure thing. Billy watched as the man went to set his rod down next to his cooler and net. But then the newcomer paused, seeming to think better of it. He walked into the trees holding his magnum rod in one hand and the fish in the other. Billy looked down at his own sorry excuse for a rod and then up to the sky. He was losing the light and the newcomer had clearly fished out the river. After only a brief hesitation, Billy cracked another beer as he walked over to the newcomer's cooler. It was tall and broad. When he opened it, the packed ice puffed up a small cloud of cool air. Billy breathed in the scent of the fresh catches as he surveyed the contents. Nothing below a medium size, and all healthy looking. A true treasure trove of meat. This was the kind of cooler Billy dreamed about bringing home to his family. The kind of cooler his pop had never achieved. Billy heard the whine of the line again. This time, felt a tug on his face. He dropped his beer and put his hand to his cheek, where a beautiful homemade lure had hooked into his flesh.
What the fuck?
Billy mumbled, as blood and saliva mixed between his teeth. He looked down the line and saw the newcomer had returned. He was holding his rod out, his left hand on the reel.
Who taught you how to fish, going around stealing another man's catch like that, Billy? I wasn't stealing!
Billy grabbed at the weighted line and tugged. The newcomer allowed the line to give, and Billy tried to use the slack to free the lure from his face. He'd almost got the barbed hook out when the newcomer reeled quickly and snapped the line taut again. Billy felt the blood creeping through the stubble on his jaw.
Ugh! Fuck!
The newcomer seemed exhilarated.
Woo! Looks like I got a live one here! Stop it!
Billy shouted as the fisherman tugged left and right. Blinding anger flared up from somewhere in Billy's belly. The kind of anger only triggered trauma can impart. Billy closed the gap between himself and the newcomer in a few leaping strides. He thumped him once in the side of the head, hard. Billy then snatched up the slack line that was now dangling between them and looped it over the newcomer's head twice before pulling on it with all of his weight. The tapered line bit into his palms, but he couldn't feel it. All Billy could hear was the beat of blood pumping inside his head. Once the man had gone limp, Billy had the sense to let the line drop, and the newcomer slumped to the ground. Carefully, he felt for the lure sticking out of his cheek with clumsy fingers. It was then that Billy noticed his hands were cut up as he fiddled with the hook. He let out an exasperated sigh. The barbs dragged on his cheek, but he soon had it out. Calmly, Billy set about packing up his gear. He quickly disassembled his trusty zipper, painstakingly ensuring that it was all stowed correctly in his pack. He dumped the contents of the newcomer's cooler into his own, and, satisfyingly, had to force the lid to close. Once he was happy he was ready to go, Billy stalked closer to the body and leaned down. He flicked out his line knife and sawed the lure free from the man's rod, then pocketed it before returning the knife to its sheath. Billy didn't look back as he made his way through the thick forest that surrounded the river. Soon enough, he found his truck where he'd left it parked beneath a sycamore. He gave a grunt of pleasure at the weight of the cooler as he hefted it into the back of the truck. As he climbed up into the driver's seat, Billy flicked open the glove box to reveal a small collection of lures. All of them were tied beautifully to reflect the chosen prey of whatever gullible fish Billy was after. He added the one from his pocket to the hoard. As Billy closed the glove box, he caught his attention in the truck's rearview mirror and winked. Billy Brook knew how to fish. Everyone knew that.
I mean, I thought he was going to become Brokeback Mountain and then was pleasantly surprised when it turned into a murder. That was... I felt incredibly childish for quite a portion of that story. Every time you said the word rod, I had to go... It was somehow flexible and stiff at the same time. Oh, no.
Describing the length and the bend and how majestic it was.
Ooh. Nothing quite like a 7600 Magnum.
Did Billy not take the 7600 no. Magnum?
They'd be able to trace it back to him, Brad. Never killed anyone before?
Oh, yeah. No, I thoroughly enjoyed writing that because it was just pure childish glee. But then, of course, something in the back of my brain just sort of turned it over and it was like, oh, he'd just kill this guy.
I thought he was going to, like, reel him in and then they were going to... Like, I've read too much bad, like, erotic fan fiction. So my brain was like, they're going to make out in like 10 seconds and the taste of blood's going to turn him on. And then I went, no, we're dealing with rational people here. This is fine.
I will be honest, when you described the man walking away and just before Billy went over to his catches, I did think you were going to say that he followed him and then the scenes would start and you'd just come up with all of these fisherman / homosexual puns. It's talking about how good the catches were.
And I thought your other rod was a Magnum. Howdy.
Yeah, it sort of felt like the kind of thing where it could have gone anywhere. And I just sort of enjoyed seeing where it took me.
I was just going to say, it's really nice to see the prompt taken that literally as well. Because we have a bad habit of being like, you know, like me, fisherman. Okay, what if a fisherman had a dog? What if the story was from the dog's... Like, each step we get further away from God every day. We stray further from God's light.
Of course we do.
But yeah, we move further from the prompt. And it was nice to see that you'd gone, okay, I'm going to use this exact prompt to write a story. So well done you for actually playing by the rules.
Following a prompt. You know, it's inside the word count. It follows the prompt. Oh, yeah.
Thoroughly enjoyable. Thoroughly enjoyable.
But of course, it's not just the two of us that have got some stories to tell. We've also got our guest, Brad Rawlinson. Yeah, a victim, yeah.
Victim.
Get the hook.
just let me get my rod out, guys. Yeah.
The 7700.
Oh my God.
The eclipse.
It's the quick collapse version.
Oh no. Take it away, Brad.
I was going to say, is that my cue to go?
I'll edit it in whatever way makes you look the most ridiculous, don't worry.
Oh, God. I don't like someone else having the editing power.
You can edit it then. Fuck you.
Please.
Joel couldn't believe his eyes. There he was, the fisherman. Through the thick fog and the thicker darkness, it was difficult to make out more than just a silhouette, but there was no mistaking it. He was there, just as the story said. A lone boatman drifting across the still water of the lake. Joel shuffled uncomfortably, careful not to disturb the rusty tackle box that was wedged between his foot and the dilapidated workbench. He had been stood in this rotten shack for over 2 hours, staring out through the broken shutters at the expanse of water. His arms were sore from leaning against the hard, cold wood of the shack's crumbling walls. His legs were tired from balancing carefully amongst the clutter strewn across the rotted floor. His clothes were dirty. He was hungry. He was tired. But it had all been worth it for this. Confirmation. The fisherman is real. Joel had been skeptical from the first moment he heard the legend. After all, ghosts weren't real. They were just a fool's way of explaining things that they themselves couldn't explain. Doors closing on their own. Belongings not where you left them. Strange noises in the night. Ghosts, they'd all say. But Joel knew there was always an explanation. And that is why the story of the fisherman so intrigued him. Everybody believed it. No matter who he spoke to in the nearby town, the legend of the mysterious man who appears only on the 1st of October in the dead of night was not a legend, but truth. The story of the spectre who sailed out on a rickety old boat onto the lake beneath the moonlight and cast his line into the deep waters was not a story, but a warning. Do not go near the lake on the 1st of October, or the fisherman will get you. Joel would always argue when he heard the tale. Maybe, just maybe, it's a man going fishing, he would say sarcastically. You don't understand, boy. There hasn't been a fish in that lake in over 20 years. Perhaps he just lives nearby and enjoys being out on the water. Nobody lives nearby. Everybody within miles of that lake lives here in this town. So, someone on vacation then? On a single day at the same time, every year? No matter what he asked, the answers were always the same. Joel had never believed a word of it. There was always an explanation. But there he was, a dark, cloaked figure, perched inside an old boat floating upon the lake. The spectre was illuminated only by the moonlight creeping through the nearby treetops, and a small lantern attached to the bow of the crumbling vessel. But it was unmistakably there. Joel could even see the fishing rod that the apparition had in its hands. The boy turned away from the lake and sunk down below the window. Perching upon the tackle box, his mind was wrestling with this sudden turn of events. The revelation that he had been wrong all of this time. Ghosts do exist. But then, Joel realized something else. A realization which slowly sunk into his throat and began to throb deep within his stomach. If the stories of the fishermen were true, so was the punishment for those who see him. If the fisherman catches you snooping on him, he'll start cutting your body into tiny chunks and casting you piece by piece into the water, trying to lure in the fish. But there are no fish in those waters, and so he just keeps cutting until there's nothing left. Joel panicked. He had come here out of skepticism, arrogance in the knowledge that he would see nothing but trees and water. Confident that he would return to town, a legend of his own. But he had witnessed more than just that. He had seen the fisherman, and he prayed that the fisherman had not seen him. Joel carefully stood back up and once more peered through the broken shutters at the lake. The boat was gone. The fisherman was gone. Joel breathed a sigh of relief. And then he heard the footsteps. the sound of heavy boots thudding against the boards of the jetty outside of the shack. Joel stepped backwards and turned to run. He heard a loud crack. Beneath his foot, the rotten floorboards of the shack gave way. Joel began to fall, his arms flailing around him for something, anything to stop him crashing onto the ground. He grabbed for a shelf, but it came loose from the wall and various cans and containers joined the boy in his fall. The hanging rope he grabbed did not pull taut and simply snapped under his weight. Joel sank into the floor. He couldn't move. He was trapped. A dark shape passed by the broken window. Joel began to tremble. The footsteps continued towards the door of the shack. Joel's breathing intensified. The handle began to turn. Joel felt a tear rolling down his cheek. The door opened, and a dark figure stood silhouetted in the open doorway. Two pale eyes, illuminated by a slash of light breaking through the roof, were fixed on the boy.
"You shouldn't be here."
His voice was deep, hoarse, and it resonated through the wood and the metal that Joel was buried in. The terrified young boy tried to scramble away from the haggard spectre, but it was no use. The fisherman stepped closer, and with every step, the floorboards groaned.
"It's not safe for one so young to be out here alone."
Every word that escaped the fisherman's mouth felt worn, aged, stretched. Yet, in that aching voice, Joel detected something he did not expect. Concern. The cabin shook as the monstrous figure took another step towards the boy, and then the fisherman reached out a hand. Joel flinched away from it.
Please, Mr. Fisherman, please don't cut me into pieces.
There was a silence disturbed only by the wind and the water lapping against the banks. And then, the fisherman laughed. Joel was still on edge as the mysterious man examined him outside under the light of his lantern. The shards of wood and various fishing accessories had not been kind to his clothes and exposed skin, but for the most part he wasn't hurt. A rusty fishing hook had left a rather nasty cut on his arm, however, which the fisherman was in the process of cleaning.
"You're lucky you weren't seriously injured, boy," he said as he dabbed the blood away.
Joel.
Joel.
The fisherman brought padding and bandages from his bag and began to wrap up the wound.
"My name is Walter."
With the lantern light so bright beside them, Joel could finally see the fisherman for who he really was. A man. An old man, clearly in the twilight of his life, but still a man of flesh and blood. His long grey hair, which was previously hanging over his face, was now tied back, revealing leathery, pale skin and sharp features. Joel could see how this man could easily be mistaken for a spectre, out here alone in the middle of the night fishing in a dead lake. There must have been an explanation. After all, there is always an explanation. Joel broke the silence.
If you don't mind me asking, sir, why are you out here fishing at this time of night?
I used to live here many, many years ago,
the old man said, fastening the bandage around Joel's arm with a safety pin.
My son and I would come to this lake every weekend to fish. We'd sometimes be out on the water for hours and catch nothing, but it was never time wasted. It was where I felt closest to him. Today was his birthday.
And suddenly, it all made sense to Joel.
I'm sorry, he said.
The fisherman smiled.
Thank you.
Joel waited patiently as the old man finished cleaning the rest of his cuts and scrapes. The remaining gauze and dressings were returned to the satchel and the used materials disposed of.
The fisherman climbed to his feet and took a deep drag of the cool autumn air.
We should really be getting you home. If your parents realized you were gone, they'd be very worried.
Joel shuffled uncomfortably, staring at his feet.
They're not around anymore. It's just me.
The old man put a hand onto the boy's shoulder.
I'm sorry too.
The two of them stood beside the moonlit lake in silence, looking out over the water. Despite the many, many years that separated them, they both shared something. They were both haunted, and they were both alone.
I've never been fishing, Joel said,
looking up at the old man beside him.
Maybe you could teach me.
The fisherman smiled down at the young boy.
I could show you how, but I should tell you. There haven't been any fish in this lake in a very, very long time.
Joel smiled back.
I know.
How dare you? How dare you pull an emotional switcheroo on me? I expected ghosts! I wanted a ghoul, a spectre, a horror, and you gave me a fucking father figure.
Yeah, I was still holding out at the end that the old man was just gonna, like, eat him somehow. You know?
Oh, I can teach you to die.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. The touch of body horror to the fisherman myth was really nice. The line, so he just keeps cutting, I think it was.
Yeah, there are no fish, so he just keeps cutting. Fantastic.
Yeah, there are no fish, so he just keeps cutting. Yeah. Really like that. And generally, just the tone and... Yeah, just quite scary. And then nice at the end.
I wanted to do the... I actually wanted to end with a happy ending because, I wanted to write something like horror-wise, but then I thought, well, I don't really want to just do a horror story. I want there to be some kind of twist.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of flipping it over and making it so that, the more information you got about it, the more you realize that these two were actually, you know, they're probably going to be good for each other.
You absolutely score multiple points with me as well, because the thing I find the most irritating in horror fiction is when it's just like, and no one ever really knew why the ghost was there, or no one knew what had brought the demon into this. Don't tell me no one knew. You wrote the script. You tell me. So thank
it's
you.
It's strange, actually. No, not a problem at all. Yeah, it started out as I wanted to do the story of when I got the prompt, the fisherman. First thing image that came into my head was a lone man floating on a lake. And I wanted to play on that. And the original story was going to be first person. And it was going to be a fisherman recounting the first time he went fishing with his son. And the reveal at the end would be that he was actually alone. And he was talking to his son who wasn't there.
Okay.
I didn't know if I could stretch that into the full length of the story and make it work. So I ended up going on a different angle and adding in an extra character so I could get the perspective from them.
Hmm. No, my brain just deleted that thought. Don't worry about it.
I was thinking about the physical description of the fisherman, and I had a very strong image, especially after the emotional turn, of the old guy from Home Alone who does the shoveling. The long grey hair and the kids making up nasty stories about him, I thought that was actually quite nice to clearly hit a bit invoke a bit of nostalgia for me.
I didn't make that connection, but no, you're right. That's almost the exact same thing. The old man, everyone thinks is like horror stories. He's a murderer. He cuts people up. And no, he just turned out to be a father who wanted to see his daughter. I think it was.
He'd become estranged from his daughter, I think, in the movie.
Yeah, it may have been his granddaughter, actually. She was in church, that was it, performing in a choir, I think.
Yes, no, you think you're right.
Yeah. At the other end of this, it turns out that the fisherman prompt, mine was full of sausages, yours, Ben, full of rods, and you said the word tackle quite a few times, Brad.
I actually can't believe I didn't make any jokes about tackle in mine. I that's just leaving pure comedy gold on the floor there, isn't it? That's ridiculous.
Right. So you told me earlier I'm not allowed to call you a YouTuber, Brad, but you make YouTube videos.
Yes, I do.
Tell us about it.
Well, it has two parts, I suppose. The part I actually get paid for is that I'm one of the editors on the Fact Fiend channel.
For anyone listening, what is Fact Fiend?
Fact Fiend is a, I guess, comedy-based YouTube channel where Carl Smallwood will take an article he's written and sort of riff about it with someone behind the camera.
Okay. And what's the other part?
The other part is that because obviously the YouTube scene is something I very much enjoy, I have myself been trying to scrape and claw my way into it, so I have been making my own videos.
I think scrape and claw is unfair on yourself.
Shameless plug right there.
Well, we will do a proper plug for you. So I know you do gaming stuff, and you do gaming stuff with your mum as well, which is brilliant.
Totally works.
Yeah, my mum and I obviously live quite far away from each other, which is soon to be extended because I'm moving further away from her. So it's just a nice way to keep in touch.
This is him telling you he's just not that into you. Sorry, mum.
I don't think my mum knows this exists, so if you leave that bit in, she never will.
If your mum doesn't know this exists, you're definitely not meeting your end of the putting this out there deal, Brad. That's...
I wasn't aware that I had to immediately send it to my mum.
Of course.
Is this because, like, it's
in your contract,
the go-to
Brad,
phrase, send it to everyone and their mum?
I just want... Yeah. Your mum to hear my dog story, Brad, that's all. I just feel like she'll appreciate it.
All right. I tell you what, I will 100% send this to my mum. So, hey mum, thank you for tuning in. These guys are really happy you're listening.
We're really happy you're listening. All right, let's give you a proper question, one that isn't going lead to your mum.
Thank you. I mean, Ben's here, so it might lead to my mum.
No, I wasn't going to make any of those jokes. Too much respect.
Ben and Brad's mum used to have a thing. They were only together for like 5 years, so...
I remember, Ben's been in my mum's bed.
Yes, I have.
It's true.
Yeah. Let's provide no context.
Back when you were step-Brad, right?
Why step-Brad? Surely he'd be step-dad.
Because Brad rhymes with dad.
Just because it rhymes doesn't mean it's a good joke.
I didn't say it was a good joke. I barely said it was a joke, Bradley.
wait. Can we get back to the YouTube thing?
Yes.
What? So, what's your plug it now? What's your gaming YouTube channel called?
Well, I have two channels. The gaming one is, I think it's just called Overdog Gaming. I'm not really trying to make that one big. I just enjoy playing games, and sometimes it's fun to edit them.
But I also think you should tell the story of why you call yourself the Overdog.
Oh God, when you're gaming. So I've been my online handle has been the Overdog now for going on 10 years or something silly like that.
It is and 10 it was years.
I believe Nico was there.
I was.
I think he was.
I absolutely was. Yeah.
It was before I really knew you. You were basically Ben's friend and Party Box.
I was.
And
this is Party Box's first mention. Holy cow.
Party Box.
The story goes that Xbox Live had a £1 for a month deal.
It did.
And the guys who I was there with, Nico being one of them, persuaded me to get an Xbox Live account so I could play Halo with them online. And we were trying to think of a name for my actual account. But... During this sort of conversation, Gary happened to mention... Gary, I assume, has he been on...
Gary from episode 2.
Yes, Gary from episode 2.
Yeah. Gary happened to mention that I'd not played Halo before. So he said to the others, go easy on Brad, he's the underdog. And I don't know if I'd been drinking...
Yes.
Or if I'm just, if I'm just naturally hilarious. Naturally hilarious. Don't cut that out, it's fine.
Just like then, that was naturally hilarious of you there, Brad.
I turned around and shouted at everybody... I'm not the underdog. I'm the overdog, bitch. I'm not sure if the bitch was there, but I've added it now.
The bitch has come with time, I think.
You know, stories get elaborated upon. It'll be a long speech in a few years' time. But then,
imagine you telling this to your children. You know, I stood there on the beach and I looked across the waves and I said, I'm not the underdog. I never
there
was.
There is no part of me that is under or canine.
Struck him across the brow and I said, I'm the overdog, I always was. You never caught me, see?
I'm never going to finish this story now, am I?
Yeah,
I'm
easy.
Well, I'd like to say that Brad Rawlinson fought the good fight.
You either get busy living, or you're the overdog.
Once you guys start doing your voices, you're just gone.
Are you talking to me?
I don't see any overdogs here.
That's the end of the story. That's the end of the story. I made a joke about being called the overdog, and that became my name. Done.
And what's your other YouTube channel? What's the one you are trying to make popular?
I'm apparently
you don't want that one to be watched. So
no, I want people to watch it, but I'm not trying to like make it such that The other one is, at the moment, it's just sort of stupid Photoshop stuff with footage of me like talking in it. It's really good, yeah.
It is genuinely hilarious.
If I wanted to go back into doing things like short films and sketches, which is stuff I actually really enjoy doing.
I think you should have us in some with you, Brad.
Well, I will, because I don't know anyone else. And Nick is essentially a professional actor, so, you know, free. I don't have to pay you, right?
You don't have to pay me. Anyone listening, email in about my rates. Brad, I'm going to ask you a proper question. We've derailed, we're going to re-rail, and then immediately derail again,
Let's get back on these rails.
Okay. I've got a proper question.
What are you reading at the moment, Brad?
Oh, this is going to be a big one. So, I'm not a massive reader, unfortunately. I actually want to read more, but I just... It's one of those things where I start... I have a really bad habit of starting a book, getting like a chunk into it, putting it down for too long, and then when I come back, I have to read the start again.
Yeah.
I've read the first few chapters of Fellowship of the Ring at least 4 times. But in terms of what I'm reading right now, I've currently started listening to an audiobook of Fellowship of the Ring.
Ooh.
I'm furthest through it than I've ever been. So,
surely you've been further in the movies. That's I know you've seen those. I've been there.
Yeah, of course I've seen the movies. I've seen lots of movies. Unfortunately, I've seen movie adaptations of books, which I hear the books are better of. So, yeah, I want to read more.
It's often just a completely different medium, though, isn't it? Like, in particular, with the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings movies are fantastic across the board, pretty much. But there are just details that they just couldn't put in. Like, all the Tom Bombadil stuff.
But I'm finding that a lot already. Like, finding out... Because, obviously, coming from a movie watcher's perspective, finding out that Merry, Pippin and Sam always knew Frodo was going and were, like, essentially planning it behind his back... Because they didn't want him to be going on his own.
But and the fifth Hobbit, of course.
Yeah, how do you feel about Bulgergate?
Fatty Bulger?
Oh, God, not being in it at all. No,
Fatty, I'll stay here and get stabbed Bulger.
Fear, fire, foes awake.
Sorry about spoilers for a 75-year-old book, everyone.
I was going to say, I don't think he's been stabbed yet, but I think the last mention of him was something about being unfortunately left him behind. So I think I kind of assumed that.
Just return to Fatty Bulger being crucified by the Ringwraiths.
Yeah, I guess what you're telling me there is Fatty Bulger doesn't get out. Oh man, he was the one I identified with the most. You know, he didn't want to leave and he was fat.
You are about to get to Tom Bombadil and that will be a massive
I've
departure
been
for
Tom
you.
Bombadil. Tom Bombadil is where I stopped reading the first time I read it.
Wow, this guy's married to a river. What's going on here?
It wasn't that. It was the fact that he doesn't stop bursting at a fucking song constantly.
And yet we're still friends.
Yeah, but you burst into songs that I can sing along
that's
with
true.
All life.
You also burst into song. Perhaps we are just bombadils together.
Yeah. If you ever get, like, if Dead Man's Whiskey ever gets to the point where you're performing, like, in front of millions and millions of people, will you invite me on stage?
If you want. We're adding this bit where we sacrifice someone, so that's fine.
What?
No, nothing. Yeah. Ben, ask a question.
Right, okay. So off the back of that, now you said you want a big reader, but what, if you had to pick one, what is the best book you've ever read?
Oh, don't do this to me. The best book I've ever read.
That is what you said, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think through all three of them. No, I genuinely not sure whether I don't. There's never been a book that I've gotten stuck to and enjoyed so much that it's like I'll tell other people that they should read it and I'll go back to it. And so it's a difficult question when you're telling someone who clearly reading isn't something that I'm predisposed to right now.
Is this where we find out that you're illiterate, Bradley?
Yeah, the story that I just read out, I wasn't reading it from...
just
from
making it up as you went along.
I've actually got someone else in my ear, in my other ear.
So well, let's expand it to give you a chance then. So we'll expand it like across all media. So movies, radio plays, video games. What's the best, like your favourite narrative piece ever?
Comic books, anything
like that. All right. We'll go with favourite narrative piece then. I used to and still really, really like the Legacy of Kain series of games.
Okay.
Oh,
Tony J, man. That voice, damn.
Oh, man. Rip Tony J. He's such a, yeah. Like, I used to try and do the voices when I was... I have a role-playing game character who is basically my attempt at doing Simon Templeman.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just a game series where the lore is so... It's deep, but it's... like I know it's deep because it's convoluted as shit. Like, they weren't planning on making a sequel to Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver until, like, the game was already towards the end of production. And so just changed all the lore and made it up as they went along.
It sounds like if you're into convoluted, difficult-to-follow lore, that reading fantasy books is right up your street.
I'm going to recommend a man named Terry Brooks and the Sword of Shannara.
Oh, my God.
Or Shannara. Did we ever settle on a... Have we got an official one?
I think I said Sword of Shannara, I think. See, it's been ages since I read the first one.
What I said was, I'm 8, this is way too complicated, what is happening, who are these people, why is this elf's name so long? Ah!
The first 3 pages is like one dude's name. Like,
he does to names what Tolkien does to trees, man. It's wild.
Oh. But what is it about that series then that makes it the best? What makes it so engaging for you?
I don't know. I just got really attached to it when I was younger. It was it's got an incredibly interesting story right from the start of it all the way through to the, because it has a bit of a time travel element in it, but all the games are also set in different time periods, and this is really elaborate history between two races, which are the vampires and the Hilden, and about how, like, it's like them and their interaction with a particular god. And the vampires are, you know, cool, blood-drinking, sunlight-hating vampires, not pussy-eat, sparkly vampires. And
wow, modern Twilight reference. You are up to date, Brad.
I was going to say I'm ashamed to say, but let me say that again.
Go on.
I'm not ashamed to admit, last time I went home to visit family, me and my mum binge-watched all the Twilight films for the sole purpose of mocking them. I mean, that was my purpose. I think she just wanted to watch them.
For the sole purpose of mocking them. Because you could have mocked them without watching them.
She wanted to watch them, and I like watching films with my mum. Is that a problem?
I don't think any of us either said that it was.
You're the only person who's been defensive about this.
I just thought if I get super defensive, I can change the subject and you won't make me talk about Twilight anymore.
All right. That leads us nicely to the next one.
So hang on, can we just take from the previous one that Brad likes the Legacy of Kain video game series because it reminds him of Twilight?
Yes.
So that's, yeah.
No, please don't take that away.
So you like vampire stories, especially the Legacy of Kain and Twilight. Brad, we'll expand it out of books into all narrative like we did before. Opposite end of the scale, worst you've come across.
Man, I'm a terrible guest.
It's true. Last time he came to my house, he did a massive shit on the living room floor. Horrible. Terrible guest.
Oh, actually, I'm going back to Twilight here.
Don't try and redeem yourself.
No. There's a specific reason, right? Have you seen the films or read the books? Like, I need to ask.
I haven't read the books. I think I've seen just the first film. I don't think I've seen the second film.
I have seen only the third film because I was very committed to having sexual intercourse with a woman, and she picked that film. And with no context, boy, is it a wild ride. Holy shit. I had no idea what was going on at all.
The third one has some like entertaining bits in it, but let's not get into the merits of that pile of shit, right? Do you guys care about spoilers?
Not at all.
Not at all. Okay.
Hang on. Let me do the warning. Warning. The following portion of the podcast contains spoilers for a very old film series that you either probably love or already hate. Go on, Brad.
Right, end of the final book / film.
Okay.
In fact, I think it might only be the film. I looked this up to see whether the book was as bad, but What happens is all of the main characters gather together to face off against the big bads.
Oh, I know what you're going to say, and, I think.
What, in like a Marvel Avengers sort of style?
Kind of, yeah. You've got all of the vampires and the werewolves on one side, then the evil vampires on the other side. And they have this big speech where they're sort of trying to reconcile differences. And it looks like things are going to end peacefully. Suddenly it breaks down, and the patriarch of the family, Carlisle, I think he was called, charges across to save someone, I think, and gets his head ripped off. And this is a book series where so far they've like pulled all the punches. Nothing particularly bad or dramatic has happened. All the characters are perfect and can't do any wrong. And suddenly his head's gone. And I was watching this film like, what? And then the fight starts, and one by one, all these main characters start dying. Like, they get ripped apart, they get like their necks broken, and the fight gets all this, this big fight sort of builds up and up and up. And I'm sat there like, this author, is it Stephanie Meyer?
Meyer, I think.
Yeah.
This author has done something that other authors are often afraid to do. They've taken this set of beloved characters and added consequences to these actions by killing them off. And, like, I'm not a huge fan of the series overall, but I have huge respect for this. Lo and behold, it was all a dream!
Isn't it like a fantasy, like a vision that one of them has?
Yeah, one of them presents the vision to the leader of the other side to show him that he will die in the upcoming fight, but they present it as a fight that happens and then pull back to this moment.
Okay, that's incredibly cheap.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if it happens the same way in the book. I think it's just explained as she shows him a vision, but seeing as talking about things that are, like, seeing as I was already on the topic of Twilight, it really, really pissed me off. Because I can't remember why I watched them originally. I think I just generally like to watch films. They were popular. But when you've sat through a pile of fucking fake-ass love triangles, she was never going to be with Jacob. When you've sat through that shit all the way through and endured the terrible dialogue and the awful acting, these abs being out in every fucking scene, and you get to the final film and they pull the rug out from you like that. I wasted years of my life and then went back and did it with my mum. Mum, if you're still listening, I didn't want to watch Twilight.
I need to check, because someone explained this to me once and I don't think I got it. And I want to... You can tell me, Brad, because you are now my Twilight deep lore expert.
Great.
Apparently, main girl and Robert Pattinson have a baby, and Wolfman...
Oh, God, no!
Wolfman looks at the baby and he's like, I'ma fuck that. I'll wait till it's legal, but I'ma fuck that.
Yeah, so this is another thing that's irritating about that. So,
Excuse me.
She has... Yeah, so Robert Pattinson and Bella, whatever, like... Kristen, whatever she's called, they have a baby, and it's a CGI baby, and it's the worst thing you've ever seen in your entire fucking life.
Is it worse than the American Sniper rubber baby?
Yes, it's 100 times worse. Like, the thing looks like a demon. In every single scene it's in, you think its head's going to spin around. You think they should have called it Regan. But no, this fucking baby, right? The second that Jacob sees it, he does this thing called imprinting, which they try not to phrase as being sexual, but it's always positioned as being sexual, because every imprint in the series is between a man and a woman who end up fucking. So, yeah, Jacob imprints on this baby, but fortunately, the baby is a magic baby, and it ages to the perfect age of, like, 25 or something, so that he can be with it. Yay!
Does that happen fast?
Yeah, does it happen in the same scene?
That's why they made it a CGI baby, so they could put the face of the older actresses onto the baby to make it look like it was the same person.
Hang on, we've got people complaining that they made a CGI Grand Moff Tarkin, and they're making CGI babies that are like 25-year-old women, so Dog Boy can fuck them.
People complained at the time, trust me.
Oh my god.
Seriously, like, if you're next to a computer, I think just Google Twilight Baby and just take a look at that fucking face. Jesus.
We'll tweet a picture of it just because we can.
I apologise that this just turned into the Twilight podcast.
I wasn't expecting it. I'm going to be honest, Brad. I was not expecting this much.
I'm actually going to rake it back in. Like, since we're talking about books, I want to actually give a shout out to a book.
Hang on.
So when I was young, when I was little, I used to read lots and lots of Goosebumps. I was a big fan of Goosebumps.
Oh, yeah, man.
And for some reason, the one Goosebumps book that's always stuck with me is called, I think it's Return to Horrorland. And it was the first ever Choose Your Own Adventure book I read. And I loved that book. I would read through it whenever I got to a decision. I would put
your thumb
on the page.
Yep. Yeah, boy.
I would read through to all the endings and essentially read the entire book, but through all the different story threads. And I don't really remember much of it, except for a big hall of mirrors.
I am going to give a big shout out to Goosebumps, but anyone who isn't aware of them, I'm just going to let you know that the late 80s and early 90s was a different time. So, for example, one of the books being definitely set in Asia and also being called The Beast from the East is not as PC as we'd like, but Egg Monsters from Mars, quality.
Monster Blood, and then when the fourth one came around and it was blue and everyone was like, what?
I didn't even engage with it on that like higher level. I just remember really enjoying that the covers had like cutouts and they were like...
Yeah, the Monster Blood textured. Had like actual slime that you could sort of...
Yeah.
Listener, around. Beware, you're in for a scare.
Oh. Well, okay, so let's move on to the next question, which is, again, we can expand that if you'd feel more comfortable, but do you have a favourite literary character? So rather than a particular book, series, or anything like that, like an actual a character from a series of books?
God, favourites questions are just the worst, guys.
They are.
Yeah.
Are they the worst or are they just difficult? And you don't like that.
I think I don't like fixating on one particular thing because my opinions change so quickly on different things. Like,
in my opinion on you is changing quite quickly at the moment, ever since the Twilight Stalked.
I'm kind of wishing that we could do a retake of this podcast now. I wasn't expecting to go on a, first of all, a chat about, you know, watching Twilight and then a big rant about how shit it was.
There was definitely an element of the Lady Death protest too much to that, by the way.
She does.
That's my favourite film! It's not, I hate it.
The glittery right. Lady.
Favourite literary character? Oh, it's got to be Edward Cullen. he's just so dreamy and so perfect.
So sparkly.
Yeah. The thing is, I've watched your first podcast that's come out so far, and you asked these questions, and I probably should have been like, oh, they're probably going to ask me those questions.
Yeah.
I'll think of some answers so that I can actually not, pause more for time while I'm thinking.
It's really funny that he thinks I'm going to cut this out, isn't it, listener?
No, don't. I'll literally be the worst guest. Like, there'll be like... Once you guys have like 20,000 listeners and it's like well into the future, and they'll be like, oh, do you remember that really shit episode really early on where you had that guy who didn't read? What a fucking waste of our time. You spent the entire thing talking about video games that no one's heard of and talking about how Twilight...
Come on. It doesn't have to be from a book. We can spread it out into movies and stuff. Is there like one character that really stands out for you?
I'm thinking. I'm genuinely thinking really hard. I clearly don't connect with many characters.
In a way, that is interesting.
It is, yeah. But it could possibly be the focus of your answer.
I mean, that sounds more like a cop-out than anything else. If I'm like, well, I don't really have a favourite character. I don't really connect with many of them because I'm so unique in myself.
You're definitely going to come off as, like, an illiterate sociopath.
A Twilight watching loon.
just a disclaimer, I have seen Brad reading, so I know that he can read.
Yeah, Ben gave me two books for Christmas one year. One was Lord of the Rings Fellowship, because he was like, this is the fantasy starter. The other one was the other one was the Assassin's Apprentice, which I had to give him back because I already owned it but haven't read it.
I need a copy of that. Can I have it?
Yeah, it's probably still lucky about something. Yeah, you can. Good old Robin Hobb.
Yeah, once again, I read about three or four chapters of it and then ended up putting it down and not picking it back up. I don't know what it is because I enjoy reading. I enjoy the process of reading. Like, recently, I was trying to get back into reading and I picked up... I had a copy of Jekyll and Hyde lying around. And because that's fairly short, I read the whole thing. It wasn't really an issue. But
it's really atmospheric as well.
Like, it is, yeah.
Really, really like that story.
It's a shame that I never got to read it without knowing the twist, I think. I think I would have really enjoyed not knowing what was coming towards the end.
Yeah.
I mean, it is interesting reading it back in the knowledge that the two are one and the same, but reading it from the perspective of somebody who doesn't know that, I think would have been fantastic.
All right. So, as a YouTuber, I'm going to call you it. You can say you're not, but... You make things for YouTube, you're a YouTuber. Deal with it. Like we're podcasters.
Yeah.
So, if you could adapt one property, and we're not going to say a book because we're learning that you're not a big book guy. But if you could adapt one medium, if you could adapt one medium to another, like, you know, you could adapt the Viennetta to a 3-act musical or whatever, anything. What would you want to adapt? Like, seriously, what would you want to adapt?
Ooh. I'd like to take, you know how they took Battleship and made it into a film?
Yes.
Yeah.
with Rihanna.
I would like to take board games and turn them into horror films.
So we've got Clue. We've had Clue.
We have a Clue. The one with three endings.
Cluedo for the English.
What would you? Yeah. What board game did you have in mind when you said that, Brad?
Oh, I'm not sure. Like, you'd have to pick one that everybody knew, like Monopoly. Imagine a Monopoly horror film.
But what about Carcassonne with the meeple getting disappeared?
There's
a meeple in a city, and then a bigger one comes in.
There's a fantastic Robot Chicken skit where they do a few movie trailers for different board game movies. So the Hungry Hungry Hippos are kind of like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle thing, except they're all the Fonz. There's a cop duo called Chutes and Ladders. It's I'd recommend having a look if that's your interest. But I think we need to pick a... What do you think is like the hardest one? Frustration. Could you make that into a film, do you think?
I think a lot of films just fit into that anyway.
Pandemic legacy? You know?
That's life, Ben. That's not it's not a film, that is reality.
Imagine a fun employed movie.
A fun employed movie could be fun.
But not if it's a horror film.
Have a horror film where flat rectangular aliens come from space to destroy us called Cards Against Humanity.
Oh no, you're giving me Pixels flashbacks.
And they just repeatedly insist that we all become racist.
I can't kill that one. Why? It's Madeleine McCann. The most powerful of all the Cards Against Humanity cards.
I can never find that one.
I tell you what, Brad, you may not be able to read, but you sure can tell a joke.
Oh, it's been no time to read, all that time working on comedic timing. It's paid off, my friend.
And yet I wrote a horror story that turns into a nice, relaxing end.
What board game was that horror story based on?
Was it
the one, you know, with the little magnetic fish that open and close their mouths and you have to get them on the rod?
Yeah, because I always imagine that one being played by an orphan, so...
In the waiting room of the...
Council ward.
Of the council office where they're going to assign him a new home.
Oh shit, did you say council ward? I thought you were going for cancer ward.
Oh my god, no!
I'm so sorry.
Just kids already got dead parents, man.
Does it normally devolve into this with you, sir?
No.
No, no, it doesn't.
No, you are the problem.
Oh, I guess I'll go then.
Well, you can nearly go. We're going to ask you one more, I think.
One more, okay. One more. Is it going to be one I can actually answer and not look like an
It doesn't
prick?
Involve books, so yes.
Okay.
I think I'm going to let you take this one, Ben.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm fairly sure you're going to give us a masterful answer to this one, Bradley.
Oh, good God.
Can you give us one super disinteresting fact about yourself? Something completely uninteresting about yourself.
Ooh, it's difficult because I'm so very interesting.
I've learned things about you tonight, so...
Yeah, we've known each other for, what, 10 years?
I think it's more than that now, mate.
It's pushing 11 now, definitely.
It's about 9 for us. You and I, and I think really 11 or 12 for you and Ben, yeah.
Okay, I've got a mole on my arm. That's pretty boring.
Is it benign?
I think so. It's got some hair growing out of it, and I was told that makes it benign.
That's actually a pretty banging answer to that. That is pretty uninteresting. Yeah. A benign mole on your arm.
Where on your arm is it?
It's on my right arm. The thing is, I can actually make this interesting. Are you ready?
Go on then.
So, it started off a little bit smaller, and it was in the direct centre of my arm. And as I grew up, my skin obviously grew, but the mole moved places. So it's now almost on the side of my arm.
You just said the center of my arm. Your arm is a three-dimensional shape, Brad.
You know what I mean? You hold your hand out with your palm flat. It was like center to the palm.
Your palm flat, facing where? Left, right, up, down?
I'll show you it when I see you!
This is an audio medium, Bradley.
I will bet you there isn't a single person listening who gives a shit exactly where on my arm
I need to know
is.
The exact diameter of the mole,
okay,
Brad.
Okay, bear with me. I think I've got a measuring tape in
I
the
think
other
I'm
room.
More interested in Brad's rotating skin.
How often do you shed?
Oh, let's not get into that conversation.
Do you peel it off completely? Like a lobster?
Sure.
Do you know that lobsters do that? They kick out of their whole shell.
They do when you eat them.
Then they... No, like, for real. They escape out of the shell, and then they eat the shell for the protein that's in it. And then they harden again on the outside, because they grow inside indefinitely, and they become too big for it. But there's a common problem, where when wriggling out, they will rip their own claws off, because inside of it, they are just like a meat bag. But yeah, some lobsters accidentally tear their own claws off getting out of their old shell, and that's hella sad. I don't like that.
Oh...
You should have written a story about a lobster.
I don't know. Maybe his dog was eating, like, clawless lobsters.
He couldn't defend themselves.
Yeah. That's so bleak.
We can't end on that. Just on the mole thing, right? I've also got a mole on my arm, right? But when I fell asleep in a science class once at secondary school, because it was super boring, somebody used the mole as the balls of a cock and balls, like a biro. And I became really paranoid for the rest of secondary school about having a mole that looked like a ball sack on my arm. It doesn't look anything like a ball sack. There you go. I think.
Nor does Ben's actual ball sack.
No,
I've come to understand.
My ball sack looks like a mole, and my moles look like ball sacks. It
looks like a star-nosed mole, though, your ball sack, right?
better than having a shovel-nosed one, I guess.
Oh my god, why am I picturing it?
Just gripping it behind its front legs and whacking it around.
For some reason, though, in order to get the proper view of the ball sack you described, I had to make his penis really small. And I get the feeling that he wouldn't be particularly happy with that.
Not if you came in and did it to me, Bradley. That'd be horrible.
I'm just going to cut some of this off.
Yeah, you're
take a little bit off the end.
Your fucking fisherman dude comes in and just keeps on cutting until the fish arrive.
Just takes it piece by piece.
Oh, dear.
You guys, right. don't ruin my nice happy ending story.
Okay.
It was a lovely story, Bradley. Thank
Let's
you very much
for
writing.
Let's have a happy ending. We love you the longest time, Brad.
We do. We do very much love you, Bradley.
Thank you for coming on, man. It's been a real genuine pleasure having you here, even though you don't know how to read. it's a sad story. You can donate to our Patreon to help Brad learn how to read.
I've definitely made myself sound worse than I am.
Maybe you could defend yourself on your Twitter. What's your Twitter handle so people can follow you?
My Twitter handle is @TheOverdog.
Of course it is. Love it.
Yeah, because I decided that I would put that one on when the Fact Fiend channel took off, which means I now have like 8,000 followers on a channel that's @TheOverdog.
Dude, does that mean you're going to get verified as TheOverdog?
Yeah, if it reaches that point. Yeah,
I think you'll find Brad's already verified as TheOverdog, ooh, baby.
Oh, yeah. In the nightclubs, that's what they call me when I stroll in. Pimp coat on, just twirling my stick around.
Walk into the club like, what up? I'm the overdog.
Yeah. But, you want to be under the over? I'm not carrying on this trail.
No. Well, some people have bought us some drinks this week. So, Nick, have you got the fateful list?
I have the legendary list. So, we have Mr. Matt McLaren, who bought me an apple teeny, but it was purple. I'm not sure if I should be worried about that, but my head has been a little bit woozy ever since. Mr.
Slightly.
Gary Laird, who bought you something that I believe had a shroom dog in it. Can you confirm whether that was more shroom or dog for me?
Certainly more dog.
Excellent. And Scott Byrne, who didn't buy me a drink this week. He just threatened me with a hammer and called me a snail man. So, thanks, Scott.
My, what an adventure. You'll have to come back another time. Our adventurers are off now in search of more stories. If you'd like to meet our adventuring party, you can reach them by Raven at Bookcase Tiny. Or, alternatively, you can help them on Patreon to fund their adventures. Those tavern ales don't pay for themselves, I'm afraid. But thank you for joining us. Now get out of my wizard tower. I have wizardy things to do. Bloody Dugan is always coming around here wanting something. I'm gonna get myself some biscuits.